Since the dawn of recorded history, humankind has depicted images and told stories of monsters. Inconceivable beings possessing impossible abilities. Things dredged from the nightmares of our primordial ancestors, which have been with us for as long as anyone can remember. Feared and even worshipped, these are things inseparable from our history, and perhaps even ourselves. Things that our minds tell us cannot exist, and yet, both classical scribes and contemporary witnesses will say, yes, they do. We now enter a place where the lines between history and legend become difficult to see, where creatures we don't dare believe in make appearances in the real world, and where our ideas about what exists and what is imagined are put to the test. Welcome to the House of Monsters. Welcome to House of Monsters, a new podcast from the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. My name is Aaron Deese, and this is Volume 2, Chasing the Witch Owl. The archives of Latin American folklore are a wealth of stories and tales to those interested in the strange, spooky, and bizarre. Ghosts, monsters, and plenty of beings which fall somewhere in between can be found in vast numbers if one is willing to do a little bit of digging, or a little bit of listening. In truth, archives may be too specific a term, as many of these traditions are passed down through oral history. They live on through the decades as cautionary tales and bedtime stories, filtered through the lenses and experiences of those who remember them. They may change from telling to telling, taking on the colors and tones of the present generation, but their core stories remain intact, and the spirit of those stories continues to flourish with a life and soul all its own. Take, for example, the harrowing tale of El Silbón, the Whistler, a popular tale in Venezuela and Colombia, a lost soul who wanders the earth carrying a sack of bones as punishment for a grisly, unspeakable crime. You'll know he's coming from the eerie, unsettling whistle that heralds his approach. Or La Llorona, the weeping woman. The spirit of a mother mourning her lost children, La Llorona may lure an unsuspecting victim to the shore of a lake or river with her haunting cries. Those who stray too close are snatched away, drowned, perhaps never seen again. Then, of course, there's the chupacabra. A recent entrant to the ranks of cryptozoology, the bizarre creature which first rose to fame after a series of sightings in Puerto Rico in the 90s has become its own self-contained phenomenon. Said to prey on the blood of livestock and sport glowing red eyes, the name chupacabra, meaning goat sucker, would appear a short time later in southern Texas after a canine-like creature, also with a predilection towards feasting on livestock, would begin making the rounds. One entity, considered by many to be much more than just a story, has terrified both children and adults for countless generations. She is called La Lechuza, the Witch Owl. La Lechuza is something of a complicated monster. Unlike many cryptozoological all-stars, the upright hominids of the Sasquatch Kingdom, the giant albino ground sloths of New York, and alleged sightings of, say, the Bishopville Lizard Man, La Lechuza is a thing which holds a unique place in the hearts and minds of those who have grown up hearing about it. Unique because it straddles the line between animal and spirit, human being and otherworldly shapeshifter. It is also deeply steeped in religious beliefs and cautionary moral lessons. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. A physical description is a good place to start. La Lechuza is generally described as a large, white owl, often with red eyes. This is spooky enough, but when witnesses begin to describe biologically impossible features, such as a haggard, terrifying human face, the monster takes on a whole new personality. Generally, they are described as large, perhaps 4 to 5 feet in height. Not impossibly large, necessarily, but still well above the average height for even the largest species of known owls. Owls, a part of the raptor family of avian species, are predators and have hearing and eyesight comparable to 8 times that of the average human. They prey on small animals and can carry up to 10 pounds in some cases, but are not large enough to prey on human beings. Or are they? Sightings of an overlarge owl would be enough to at least warrant mention in a discussion of unclassified animals and/or monsters, but La Lechuza is much more than an unpleasantly large bird. Encounters with it, or her in most stories, but there are cases that concern distinctly male incarnations of the creature, are more on the level with demonic encounters than sightings of a plesiosaur in a Scottish lake. Schooled and learned people will tell you that a lechuza is nothing more than a common barn owl. In Spanish, an owl is also a tecolote, or bujo, and as a point of fact, yes, a lechuza is an owl. However, to those of us familiar with the old ways, a lechuza is much more than an ordinary owl. On either side of that river we call the Rio Grande, from Matamoros to El Paso del Norte, none will utter the word lechuza to describe a common owl. This word is always regulated to the dark side, that place where ghosts, nightmares, and demons dwell. That quote comes from the book Lechuza, Eerie and Unusual True Tales by Hernan Moreno Hinojosa. Hinojosa wrote the book after a long career as a law enforcement officer in Texas, chronicling some of the strange stories to come his way during his years on the force. The book contains a particularly interesting and chilling lechuza encounter, and one which seems to set a template to which many other sightings can be compared. The story in question concerns an oil lease which was in operation just outside of Hebronville, Texas in the 1940s. Hebronville sits in the southern point of Texas, east of the border city of Laredo. The oil lease, or work site, in question was experiencing repeated occurrences of work crews fleeing mid-shift and refusing to return, citing the presence of a red-eyed, winged creature. On one occasion, the men traveled to the work site armed, and one man in particular, known for being a crack shot, fired on the creature with a .30-30 Winchester rifle. The round made contact, but instead of flopping over dead, the enormous owl swooped down at the man who had fired the shot and spit the bullet back out at him. Time passed, the oil lease became unprofitable due to a lack of production, and finally one courageous man, whom the book names Abel, was able to subdue the lechuza after firing on her with bullets blessed by a local priest. Here, the story becomes even stranger. After being shot, the creature transformed into a human being, a witch or bruja, who had been paid to use her supernatural powers to scare the work crews off of the land by a royalty claimant to the oil lease who had not been written into the agreement. There's a lot to unpack in this story. Oil and gas are, in some parts of Texas, the economic backbone of entire towns, communities, and families. It's an interesting thing to note a tale in which this old-world legend intersects with modern industry, even providing resistance to the ever-marching machine of the American economy. The story provides a great overview of the overall concepts behind this legend, touching on the elements of shape-shifting, witchcraft, religion, greed, and superstition. Its origin point of the 1940s is also an interesting thing of note, though I have yet to determine just why that might be. One of La Lechuza's favorite pastimes is to harass persons who have had too much to drink as they make their way home from a night of debauchery. A classical interpretation of this is that the creature will stalk offending individuals on their walk home, screeching "baracho," or drunkard, into the night. Sometimes Lechuza will putter off after her chorus of insults, but other times she will launch a physical attack before disappearing. She is said to sweep down from the shadows, latching onto the chest of her victim with sharp, bird-like talons. For many people, the legend of La Lechuza is one which hits very close to home. For the purposes of my own research, I too found this the best place to start looking. My wife, Sarah, and the person who introduced me to the story of La Lechuza a few years ago. She relays an encounter with the creature by a relative, now deceased, who is known as being a person of less than admirable character. Said relative was known by her children and other relatives as being particularly ungrateful and selfish when family members would stop by to visit or bring gifts, and had a reputation for being an unkind and ugly person. One night, while walking home, she was followed by an enormous white owl with glowing red eyes. While gathering information for this episode, Sarah was an obviously natural choice as a consultant. Sarah was born and raised on Westside San Antonio, and if you're looking for a place that is deeply inundated with Latin American tradition, you need not look much further. I asked Sarah when she first encountered the legend of La Lechuza.
I was told about La Lechuza as a younger, I was around 10 years old. I don't remember exactly who told the story to me. It most likely was my mom, but also probably could have been my sister, since she liked to tell me like folklore tales and freak me out and make me think I was adopted, that kind of thing. So I don't know exactly who told it to me.
I asked also after the ways in which the story had been presented. What was its purpose? Was it applied somehow? Or was it simply something that was talked about?
But it was told to me as a kind of warning for being either like ugly behavior or lying. It was presented as a way to enforce, you know, that lying was not an appropriate thing to do in any way. And if I was lying, that I needed to acknowledge and admit that I was lying.
She also recalls a time when, as a child, she had been less than honest with her mother and spent the evening fearing that La Lechuza would make an appearance.
I don't remember if I'd lied to my mom to stay at my friend's house that night or what caused me to kind of fear her, you know, showing up. But that night it was lightning and I was terrified that she was in the tree watching me because I had either been dishonest about maybe spent, like I said, I don't remember what it was. Why would I have had that fear? But that was my boogeyman. That, you know what I mean? That was something that caused me to pause and realize, was what I was doing good?
What about the present generation? Sarah heard about this story from her mother, but what about those who are coming after us?
I flat out asked my niece yesterday, who is 16 going on 17, going on 40, I don't even know. I just asked her flat out, do you know who La Lechuza is? And she shook her head and said no. I also asked what were the current monsters stories being told that she believed right now for her current generation, and she kind of was like, none. She didn't bring one up specifically or mention anyone.
One defense against Lechuza is said to come from simply shouting at her. What one is supposed to shout, however, is somewhat ambiguous. Some interpretations say prayer is the best defense, while others state that cursing will drive Lechuza away. This seems an odd juxtaposition, but may have something to do with the ways in which our ancestors viewed the importance of spoken language, be it through divine invocation or the application of verbal violence. Perhaps a topic for another day, but spoken words are also an important component of magic in many traditional belief systems. The book Metroplex Monsters by Jason McLean, which contains a number of stories of encounters with strange beings in the Dallas-Fort Worth area of Texas, contains a report from 1997, wherein a woman would have a run-in with La Lechuza while walking home late at night. While crossing the street at 1 in the morning in the Oak Cliff neighborhood, the witness, an Angelica Lopez, was stalked by a creature she described as, quote, like a bird the size of a horse, as it moved from tree to tree, apparently following her and crashing through the branches. Angelica arrived home and was instructed by her magically inclined aunt to take a shower and burn her shoes, the idea being to cleanse whatever had attracted the Lechuza to her in the first place. This would apparently prove ineffective, as the creature would tap on Angelica's window throughout the night in sets of three sharp raps, and would continue this behavior for six consecutive days. Perusing Reddit and other online discussion venues yields a number of anecdotes regarding Lechuza encounters in the Mexican city of Guanajuato, which, interestingly enough, would serve as the origin point of yet another encounter with Lechuza, relayed to me by a secondhand witness. A friend who presently resides in the U.S., but whose family hails from Guanajuato. In no uncertain terms, he stated that stories of La Lechuzas, in the context of shape-shifting witches, or brujas, are rife in some parts of the community to this day. He relayed a story of a potential encounter with one, which took place on the 5th of July in 2020. A strange, dark shape which resembled a meteor cloaked in smoke would appear over a tree line, moving quickly through the air for several meters before disappearing. He even provided a video. While I can't say for sure what the video shows, it is certainly one of the stranger pieces of evidence that I've seen over the last few years. The witnesses of the encounter would apparently state that they had seen a lechuza. Like many other monsters, lechuza has also inspired pranksters and practical jokers on at least one notable occasion. In October of 1975, just in time for the Halloween season, in Robstown, Texas, a suburb of the coastal city of Corpus Christi, a rash of calls were made to local law enforcement and media outlets with sightings of a large, winged creature that had apparently taken to harassing pedestrians at night. The calls would abruptly cease after a few weeks, petering out in November, and no further explanation was given. That is, until a couple of months later, in January of 1976, when the Corpus Christi Caller, a local newspaper, would feature a photo of police detective David Esquivel standing next to a human-sized mannequin, complete with wings, feathers, and a creepy face of feminine quality. The dummy had been confiscated from a group of local teens in the wake of the Robstown Bird sightings, the perpetrators of an arguably successful hoax, depending on the subjective metric by which a hoax can be determined as successful. Where the legend of lechuza comes from is difficult to say. It is discussed in so many cultures and communities that, like other Latin American entities of myth, its roots are deeply buried, but we may be able to point to one possible point of origin. Stay with me on this one. We're going on a bit of a ride. Another creature of avian quality depicted over and over again in Mesoamerican art is Quetzalcoatl. Also called the Great Feathered Serpent, Quetzalcoatl is exactly what its nickname would seem to imply, a serpentine dragon, sometimes shown with wings and a great feathered mane. An object of worship in many Mesoamerican cultures, Quetzalcoatl was present in Mesoamerica for hundreds of years. In some ancient societies, the priests or acolytes of Quetzalcoatl were known as the Nagual, also called the Jaguar Men. The Jaguar Men are yet another Mesoamerican legend well worth their own study, but for our purposes today, they are also said to be shapeshifters. They could take on a variety of animal forms, such as jaguars, dogs, balls of fire, and owls. Some records suggest that an early incarnation of the Nagual came in the form of the Tlaquecolotl, which translates from some pre-Spanish dialects roughly as the Owl Men. Quetzalcoatl would also be depicted in a variety of forms across various Mesoamerican cultures, both as a human and a giant feathered snake. But in some versions and stories, he also had the ability to shapeshift. Is there a connection between Quetzalcoatl, the Nagual, and La Lechuza? Is the shapeshifting motif constant here for some greater reason than its popularity as a storytelling vehicle? We may never know. Part of the reason is that the nature of La Lechuza has been recolored over the decades by the cultures which interpret it. Its modern form as a cautionary tale steeped in Christian overtones is far removed from the Mesoamerican societies in which it may have originated, but this is likely a natural progression. As Christianity took a foothold in Mexico during the 16th century, many native belief systems found themselves at odds with the, shall we say, sometimes aggressively popular new religion. As of 2020, 78% of the population of Mexico identifies as Roman Catholic, according to the U.S. State Department, but this would not happen overnight. In many cases, and as can be observed in other parts of the world, Christian beliefs intersected with some existing cultural staples, rather than replace them outright. La Lechuza, whatever her place in society may have been at that point in time, became in part a cautionary tale warning against drunkenness, neglecting one's religious duties, and all other manner of morally ambiguous behavior. One question we should ask, however, is if this potential lineage, dating back hundreds of years, well before Christianity arrived on the North American continent, indicates the presence of an all-too-real creature. It should be noted that the folklore and legends we've just referenced are rich, diverse, and not satisfactorily summarized herein. I can comment only on what my own research has revealed, and encourage the listener to seek out greater sources than this podcast for historical and academic notes on Mesoamerican folklore. Another comparison which is likely inevitable, at least by aficionados of North American cryptozoology, is that of one of the most popular real-world monsters of all, the Mothman. Aside from the aesthetic parallels, a bird-like appearance and glowing red eyes, the Mothman is thought of by some to be a harbinger of bad fortune. This seems to come almost entirely from the fact that the prominent flap, pun not intended but still applicable, of Mothman sightings in Point Pleasant, West Virginia during 1966 and 1967, which made the creature famous in the first place, seemed to culminate with the tragic collapse of the Silver Bridge, which connected Point Pleasant to neighboring Gallipolis, adjacent on the Ohio River. Often omitted from this chilling narrative is the fact that Mothman sightings in and around Point Pleasant did not end with the collapse of the bridge, and the fact that Mothman was but one of several strange phenomena which were reported by witnesses from the riverside town at this point in time. Nevertheless, Mothman as a harbinger of bad luck or sign of some oncoming tragic event is a trope which has woven its way into modern discussions in the paranormal community, with some even claiming that the creature was present during the nuclear disaster in Chernobyl. This particular idea is a fictitious event, springing from the movie The Mothman Prophecies. Richard Haddam, the screenwriter for the film, has gone on record to confirm that the Chernobyl connection is a matter of his own invention, meant to be a creative storytelling element. It may also be worth mentioning that one common attempt at debunking the prominent Mothman sightings is that witnesses may have been seeing a plain old owl. This explanation does not suffice for many, made evident by the Mothman's enduring popularity, but the connections to La Lechuza are there, all the same, both aesthetic and thematic. This connection, this idea of bad luck and ill fortune, also extends to the noble owl. La Lechuza is not the only owl-adjacent myth to come from the historical record. They have been assumed to possess supernatural properties for centuries across the globe. As a species, they are found on almost every continent and have been nearly universally regarded as bad omens and signs of bad luck. They roost during the day, taking up residence in abandoned and isolated places, furthering conjecture that they may be the associates of ghosts or spirits, or simply be ghosts themselves. If you've ever looked into the eyes of an owl, you may have experienced a strange and uncanny sensation, which many of our ancestors took to mean that the owl is much more than a simple bird. An interesting exception to the bad luck rule of owls comes from, of all places, South America, where a Guatemalan tradition holds that owls are actually symbols of good luck and prosperity. Like the piggy bank so many of us deposited coins into as children, owl banks are not uncommon in Guatemala. A similar legend exists in Japan. Some have speculated that the similarities between the Mothman and La Lechuza indicate a precedent for the Mothman, or something like it, existing within the historical record. One question which should be asked is that if the Mothman sightings of the 1960s had taken place in, say, Nuevo Laredo, Texas, or rural New Mexico, if they might not have been labeled by witnesses and media as something else. Something much, much older.
What would have happened had La Lechuza had gotten a big kind of story like that back in the 50s and 60s that caused it to have a little bit more staying power than what it has currently?
Whatever La Lechuza is, a large bird that some mistake for a spiritual being, a shape-shifting witch or warlock, a folktale with no basis in reality, or something else entirely, her talons are firmly set in the modern day, much as they were in the cultures of the Mesoamerican tribes who first warned their children to keep their eyes peeled for giant owls with glowing eyes. Whether or not you believe in monsters, witchcraft, or shapeshifters, you may do well to take an extra glance over your shoulder on your next nighttime stroll, lest the witch owl decide to follow you home. You've been listening to House of Monsters, presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. Written, created, and edited by Aaron Deese. Executive producer, Seth Breedlove. Tune in next time for Volume 3, Snowmen Most Abominable.